Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Continuing our studies in Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter Elements of Material Creation. We're on text 13. Sattvam jnanam rajak karma.
Sattvam jnanam
rajak
karma.
Tamo jnanam hihochate.
Tamo
jnanam Svabhava
Sutram Evacha.
Sattvam Jnanam Rajak Karma.
Tamo
Jnanam
Hochate.
Guna Vyatikara Kala. Svabhava
Sutram Evacha.
Satvam, the mode of goodness. Jnanam, knowledge. Rajaha, the mode of passion. Karma, fruit of work. Tamaha, the mode of ignorance. Agyanam, foolishness. Iha, in this world. Uchate, is called guna, of the mode. Jati karaha, the agitated transformation. Kalaha, time. Svabhava, innate tendency, nature. Sutram, namaha tattva, eva, indeed. Cha, also. Translation, report. In this world, the mode of goodness is recognized as knowledge, the mode of passion as fruit of work, and the mode of darkness as ignorance. Time is perceived as the agitated interaction of the material modes, and the totality of functional propensity is embodied by the primeval sutra or mahatattva. Report. The impetus for the interaction of the material elements is a forward movement of time. Because time is passing, the embryo grows within the womb. Gradually comes out and grows up, produces byproducts, dwindles, and dies. All of this is due to the pushing of time. In the absence of the time factor, the material elements do not interact, but remain inert in the form of pradana. Lord Krishna is establishing the basic categories of the material world so that human beings can conceive of the Lord's creation. Were the categories not condensed, and the analyst and conceptualization would be impossible, since the Lord's potencies are infinite. Although there are numerous divisions of material elements within the basic divisions, the spirit soul is always to be understood as a distinct transcendental element meant for residence in the kingdom of God. So we're exploring more into the elements of material creation. Talking a little bit about the interaction of the elements here. And the material creation is a pretty amazing thing. It's very impressive, actually, if Mother Nature decides to show off a little bit. It can turn everyone's heads, just like this lava flow. Tourists from all over the world are going just to see this thing going on in Hawaii, because it's such a miraculous show of the potency and energy of the Lord that no one can control, no one can do anything with. And so the interaction of all these modes is described that it's influenced by time. And time is an incredible thing. But the production of life is another example of how this time, this interaction is working. Like it's describing here, how it goes from birth to death. But just birth alone is an incredible thing. I was there for the birth of the calf, and all of a sudden you see two little hoofs coming out, and then all of a sudden we pull a little bit, and all of a sudden you see this big head come out, and the eye for the first time opened up. It was looking right at me. You know, you're thinking, what is that calf? I mean, it's been in that dark womb, and all of a sudden it opens up, and what's going on in here? And then death is also an incredible thing. Just like you're speaking to someone one day, and then next day, they're gone. Gone. The soul is completely gone. You can't never get that association back again. Such an incredible thing. But time, it has a great influence on all this. And who can explain time? Can anyone explain it? Not really. It's unexplainable, because it is Krishna, and Krishna is very bewildering. But can you imagine it without time? When would class start? I don't know when it would start. When would it end? I mean, what could get done if there wasn't time? I mean, I get upset if someone's 10 minutes late, but if you didn't have any time that anything happened, or maybe that anxiety would be gone, I think it'd be complete chaos myself, but with no time, it's totally bewildering, just like Krishna. And it's not stoppable. Prabhupada gives that nice example of the person on the deathbed saying, pleading with the doctor, just give me, you know, just a few more weeks. You know, I have this to do and that to do. But no, no one can stop it. No one can extend it. No one can even slow it down, even a little bit. And we see that, you know, we're wishing that, oh, give me just a couple more weeks for my projects for Janmashtami, you know, make it a little bit longer. Or you're on the deity altar, and I heard someone saying, why don't they just make it an hour more time so we can dress the deities? They were serious about it, going, oh, we have so much time. But never enough time, right, to do what we want to do. Yet Krishna here is described as not affected by any of this kind of material time, not at all. He was on the battlefield, and he was supposedly 125 years he'd been on the planet, but he looked Navayovanam, like 16, beautiful, gorgeous features. And here we are in our 60s, and we look over 125 years old, you know. So we can see how the material energy is very much affecting us. But is Krishna really not affected by time? When you're in the spiritual world, supposedly time is conspicuous by its absence, but the cowboys are waiting. Come on, Krishna, wake up so we can go play. I want to help finish, you know, putting the ankle bells on. I want to go to the barn and wrestle, and I want to do this. And then the gopis are thinking, they're looking at their watches. Oh my gosh, Krishna's been out all day. And then they get on top of the Chandrashlika of Nanda Maharaj's house, and they see, oh, there's the dust raised by the hooves of the cows. It must be coming home now. So there is some time, and things are, Krishna's scheduling his events, his pastimes. So it is a type of time, but it's a transcendental time. So he is affected and he is not affected. So we can go along with the discussion on argumenting and how it's true and it's not true. So at the same time, we can see here it's true and not true. But materially, there is no affecting Krishna, although we are so much affected by it. And so here's describing the advantages of categorizing all these different elements. So many different elements, so many lists, so many categorizations. I remember I can barely reach back in my mind, remember how the species were organized according to kingdom, I think class, order, species, something like this. Anyway, we had to memorize it, but so much for that. And so we had to learn all these different ways to organize the species and the different orders of life. But in the Vedic culture, too, we see that not just the scientists, but also in the Vedic culture, things are categorized to our benefit. Here it's describing that it helps us to see the organization of the bigger picture of this creation, which is like I said, an amazing thing. And it's a very big thing, much bigger than we ever could understand. And it goes beyond the limits of the scientific categorization because it describes the many, many millions of universes and then beyond. It describes this whole spiritual world. So how much more there is to categorize. And so we are hearing about these different elements, 10, 20, 25, 30, 50,000, I don't know, every time it says something different. But I'm befuddled by it all. Even if they said it was this many, I'd still be befuddled because it's so beyond our conception. And most of the conditioned souls, they don't worry about all these categorizations. They're just worrying about how I can exploit this material energy. What can I get out of all these elements? And before you know it, they're just figuring out how I can enjoy it before I get kicked out by time. So this is not so beneficial by so many people. And it's very tiring, too, to try to figure out how this universe is put together and how it's running. Although many people get many boons and money for their research and everything, but ultimately it's very tiring for the soul to be here in this material world and trying to figure out what to make of it. It's a very foreign place to us, like it's describing in the end here, that we belong in a different place. This is not our permanent residence. And therefore, we're struggling so hard to try to figure out how to just exist and how not to be affected by time and how to escape suffering. We very much try to skirt this suffering thing, all of us. I was working on a log cabin, and all of a sudden a log rolled on my finger the other day and really squished it really bad, and the pain was like way up there. And I'm thinking, there's that always that description of how much finger you can experience pain in and how much you can enjoy, playing with something. And then you think, boy, this is like the limit, And then the next morning I'm in the kitchen and something ran right into it. And I go, oh, my God. There's no limit. There's no limit to the pain in this material world. None. So I figure, okay, I'll go to the hospital. I'll visit some of the devotees that are in the hospital. Maybe, misery likes company. So I went in and I saw a couple of devotees, and I'm looking around and thinking, there's no limit to all the things that can go wrong and how much pain you can experience in tubes everyone's so restless in there. They just want to get out. They just want to get out of this. The soul is dying to get out of this material existence because it doesn't belong here. It really doesn't. This material body is not made for enjoyment. But the fortunate soul will not waste their time to endeavor to do all this, in finding time, finding enjoyment. They'll endeavor to understand the spiritual science of Krishna consciousness and realize how they can use all these different elements in Krishna service. And they understand, they can see the material elements, they can use all these examples to see that Krishna is really pulling the strings. He's behind all of this. It's not ourselves, and that he's not affected. And our greatest endeavor is that we just want to, it's time for going home, that nice song by, what's his name? Time for going home, I forget his name anyway. It's time for us to go home, all of us. But while we're here, we try to work with the material energy. We try to convert it from that matter to spirit, using it in Krishna service. There's a nice description in the second canto about how the rising and setting of the sun takes away the life of everyone. One day is gone, can't get it back. Except for the person who is hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord. Because that's our eternal activity. I was there when Prabhupada gave a lecture on that verse in L.A. Very, very powerful lecture. But it's true, the devotee is not affected by this rising and setting sun one day. It doesn't matter, because we're eternally engaged. I was thinking yesterday, some devotees asked me if I could make some things for the altar on Janmashtami, and God asked me, so I'm squeezing in some time to do all these little things. It's so much fun, It's fun because I was thinking, in the spiritual world, Vrinda Devi probably every day is a festival. And so she's constantly asking someone, well, can you do this? Can you make this? Can you make the bower like this? And can you, birds, can you sing in this tune? And can this color happen? Can these flowers happen? And so this is what we're doing. I was thinking, yes, just keep asking me to do things. Just keep me busy in Krishna service. Like we're praying to Vrinda Devi, to Tulsi Devi every day. Give me that privilege of devotional service. Keep asking me to do something. You can see, like Sudama, the garland maker, was saying, ask a benediction by Krishna after benedicting with some nice garlands. What would you like? He says, I just want constant service. That's all. And so these are eternal activities. It's not going to change now. We're in devotional service. We're in that internal energy. We're no longer in the material energy if we keep hearing and chanting and serving Krishna. So it's definitely a real thing, this devotional service. So the spiritual soul is described here as an element, but it's such a different element. It's such a very, very special element. And it has different qualities that can't be really understood or explained by any material scientist. Can you explain effect? Can science explain affection? Just like yesterday we announced that we have this little cat that was brought here to help with our project, and it was taken from its mother, and then now we're weaning the cows. And so one cow who's never been before is now producing some milk because it likes this little calf. It felt sorry for this little calf, so now it's producing some milk. And because I noticed the udders are very swollen, and so sure enough, how can you explain that? The soul is so special, it has affection, but that element, how do you describe it? You can't write books and put it in, organize it and have some scientific discovery about it. No, it's automatically there in the soul. So many different things: humility, compassion, all these qualities of the soul. This is the spiritual element that the devotee is concerned of. And how is it nourished? It's nourished by bhakti. This is the only thing that can make it fructify and come out again. So we take this process very seriously. We have a book, Bhakta Rasamrita Sindhu, The Nectar of Devotion. Such an amazing book. Prabhupada said it's our law book for the next 10,000 years, and that we should read it at least 10 times. Prabhupada said at least 10 times every devotee should read that book. There's so many lists. The first list is there's four waves, right? And the ocean is four waves. And then it goes into how many qualities Krishna has. And then it has how many qualities in the spiritual world. And then it lists how many lists. All it is a book of lists. It's like a law book, just things after things. So this is our science that we want to study, because it tells about this higher element, this transcendental element, which we are. And if we study this book, if we really can understand it at all, we will begin to experience the real nature of ourselves, which is the soul. And we can also understand Krishna ultimately. And there's describing what all the different combinations of rasas you can have, and it's so scientific.
I get up to about the second wave and then I'm lost. It's just that lost.
But it's such an elevated science. We have to spend this lifetime, more than 10 times we have to read this book. Lifetimes we're going to have to read this book to really understand it. Papa was so kind to give it in the very beginning, because I guess he realized that we need a lot of time to study this book. We better start right away. So it was one of the first books, because it is such an important thing. And it tells about all these different elements, and it also tells about the interaction of them all, and that that to get on that platform to interact, that there's one element, one thing that makes it all really happen, and that's devotion. Not commotion. Commotion with the material modes of nature and time, this is what you get, big mess. But with the elements of the soul and devotion, you get real life. You get real love for Krishna. And this is what the devotee wants to spend his time doing, is trying to really understand nescience and knowledge together. There's a wonderful Ishvaparishad verse, Vijam cha vijam tayas tad vedo bayam saha abhijaya mritam chetva vijaya mritam ashnate. Only one who can learn the process of nescience and that of transcendental knowledge side by side can transcend the influence of repeated birth and death and enjoy the full blessings of immortality. So if we really want the juice, then we have to not only understand this material world, but understand this whole spiritual science. Can you imagine that if in all the schools over in the AL, whatever it is over here, actually taught a little, just a little bit of spiritual science along with the material science? Just think of the difference it would make from the lives of those children. And here they're getting, you know, over 50% of, on the devotion side. But just if everyone would just inject a little bit into the education of their children, it would make a difference in this whole world. You know? So actually, I remember the day, I think I was in sixth grade, and my parents were talking about something about the newspaper news and everything, and all of a sudden they come on the PA system in home class and said, "We're no longer saying the Lord's Prayer." And that was the end of it. God was out of here, out of the education system. And, you know, they had to swallow it. But just a little bit of this knowledge, side by side, it makes us understand what really is going on in this material world. There's also a very nice shloka right next to this verse in the Shir Shivanishad that also echoes how to cultivate this knowledge. And I see it as it's like tips on how to really absorb yourself in the spiritual science. And as I read these 18 items, you can kind of just sit there and figure, how much am I really taking advantage of this? How much am I really, am I getting the most out of this process that Prabhupada has so kindly given us? So I'm going to read these 18 items very quickly. It's very important if I can find it. Very important to review this every once in a while. It's in you know where it is in here? 18 items of cultivating knowledge. Anybody have their little phone, they can look it up real quick. Make use of these ridiculous things that everyone looks at all the time. Okay, here it is. It says, one should become a perfect gentleman and learn to give proper respect to others. One should not pose himself as a religionist simply for name and fame. One should not become a source of anxiety to others by the actions of his body, by the thoughts of his mind, or by his words. One should learn forbearance even in the face of provocation from others. One should learn to avoid duplicity in his dealings with others. One should search out a bona fide spiritual master who can lead him gradually to the stage of spiritual realization, and one must submit himself to such a spiritual master, render him service, and ask relevant questions. Number 7, in order to approach the platform of self-realization, one must follow the regular principles and join the revealed scriptures. One must be fixed in the tenets of the revealed scriptures. One should completely refrain from practices which are detrimental to the interest of self-realization. One should not accept more than he requires for the maintenance of the body. One should not falsely identify himself with the gross material body, nor should one consider those who are related to his body to be his own. One should always remember that as long as he has a material body, he must face the miseries of repeated birth, old age, disease, and death. There is no use in making plans to get rid of these miseries of the material body. The best course is to find out the means by which one can regain the spiritual identity. One should not be attached to more than the necessities of life required for spiritual advancement. One should not be more attached to wife, children, and home than the revealed scriptures ordain. One should not be happy or distressed over the desirables and undesirables, knowing that such feelings are just created by the mind. One should become an unalloyed devotee of the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, and serve him with rapt attention. One should develop a liking for residence in a secluded place with a calm and quiet atmosphere, favorable for spiritual culture, and one should avoid congested places where non-devotees congregate. And one should become a scientist or philosopher and conduct research into spiritual knowledge, recognizing that spiritual knowledge is permanent, whereas material knowledge ends with the death of the body. And then Prabhupada gives one little very nice comment. By advancement of material knowledge, modern man is simply being converted into an ass. So if we don't want to be converted into an ass, then we should take advantage of all these different tips to help us, elevate us out of this material existence as soon as possible. Because it's not going to get any better here in the material world, I guarantee you. I'm sure I don't have to convince you of that. These prayers that Uddhava, Krishna is describing here, but these prayers, Uddhava Gita, are paralleled in the Bhagavad Gita, and I found a few verses that also acknowledge what Krishna is saying here about how he creates the universe, but he's not part of it. And so we can hear these. This is in the 9th chapter. O Dhananjaya, all this work cannot bind me. I am ever detached from all these material activities, seated as though neutral. So he's done all this creation, but he's just sitting back, not worried about anything. The material nature, which is one of my energies, is working under my direction, O son of Kunti, producing all moving and non-moving beings. Under its rule, this manifestation is created, annihilated again and again. So it's going on perpetually forever until all the souls are back home, but pretty much that ain't going to happen. Fools deride me when I descend into human form. They do not know my transcendental nature as the supreme lord of all that be. So when we're lost in ignorance, we don't recognize that Krishna is behind all this. Those who are thus bewildered are attracted by demoniac and atheistic views. In that deluded condition, their hopes for liberation, their creative activities, and their culture of knowledge are all defeated. In other words, if you get captured by this material energy, you're going to be lost. And you're going to be lost for a very, very long time. So we want to make sure that we don't get lost again. O Sanaprita, those who are not deluded, the great souls, are under the protection of the divine nature. They are fully engaged in devotional service because they know me as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, original and inexhaustible. So if we keep in this knowledge, if we keep ourselves saturated by cultivating this knowledge, keep in contact with Krishna all the time, and then we're going to feel protected, even though the material energy is pounding on all sides. Every direction is pounding, but we will be protected, and we will not go back into darkness. I was speaking with someone who was going through some problems, even in their life, even as a devotee, even trying so hard. And I was saying that, you know, you'll never be able to go back. You can't go back to the material world because we know too much. We just know too much. There's just no way that we can be deluded. It's so brilliant, so much knowledge. We're so enlightened by anything we read in these books and so convincing that we can't close our eyes to what we've heard. We just know too much. So we feel comfortable, and that makes our faith grow stronger and stronger and stronger, so much so that it projects us forward out of time. Instead of time projecting us into just another material existence, we defeat time, and we go past time, and we can go back to the spiritual world where we can spend all day long playing with Krishna and being with Krishna. So does anyone have any questions or comments? Where that, Mika?
Can't get the mic to work.
We can hear you.
Started with
was Einstein's way as well. That was also Einstein's thing. Any other comments, questions? Yes, sir. There's no mic. Unless they get paid for all the research and everything.
Yeah, so
we don't get paid for anything. Material science can't explain the spiritual science. Can't touch that. Mama B. It projects everyone forward, and the soul wants to do something. We have to do something, so time is always does that, makes us go forward, and we're never happy really with what we're doing here in the material world, so we need more time to get more happiness. So it's just a cycle until we've had enough of this kind of material time, then we want to get out. But time is bewildering. I can't understand. But it's described here as it makes everything move forward. No one wants to go backwards usually. We always want to go forward. We want to dress the deities more. We want to do everything more and more and more. It's our rajas, I guess. But now we can spiritualize it, at least use our time wisely. And wish that we hadn't. I mean, some people, you know, that have gotten like the death call wish they could stay around to serve Krishna more. But hopefully serving Krishna, you know, in the spiritual world. I mean, we have our list of things we'd like to do for Krishna here, but really we'll be just continue doing what we're doing in the spiritual world. So we shouldn't have that anxiety like the material lists have about time. So don't spend too much time worrying about it. Yes.
Time every day, and he has to attend on time because that's how the code is. So that's eternally
visualization of transcendental mellow, in spiritual world, everything is perfect. Even though it looks like a rushing for time. Like an example of Jagannath's manifestation. Untimely. Even they ask in the Golden Gate Park to Prabhupada that the tourists, they came to visit the Rajagatra and they did not feel comfortable. What kind of form is God that don't have a good feature of leg and hand? So Prabhupada says, but they have come to see, no? Say, yes. So they have, their eternal life has begun. Eternal function of the soul's heart has begun. So that's eternal credit is there. But because they are criticizing the Lord's form, incomplete, so they have to take it with detour. But they are, so then eternal benefit is there, but temporary some trouble is there. So in one sense, my conclusion is what I understand, maybe you can correct me, that in spiritual world, or whether in eternal world or cheap down here, that are not named there, there's nothing wrong, everything's perfect, there's no rushing for time. But it appears like they're rushing for time. Because everybody cried when they opened the door at 14 days. Because the Brahmana disappeared, Vishavasi. And the Jagannath is incomplete. And it's like, oh no, who is responsible for this?
You want to conclude?
Everybody for them, can you say it in the mind? Maharaj actually invited
Woodstock.
Woodstock.
It's a little late for that.